Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. Today, we are so honored to have Steve Green, president of Hobby Lobby and chairman of the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C., with us. Steve has authored three books, Faith in America, The Bible in America, and This Dangerous Book. Steve Green became president of Hobby Lobby in 2004 and has helped his family grow the business to more than 800 stores in 47 states with over 32,000 employees. He is a national speaker on both business and philanthropy, always focusing on how his faith intersects with his life endeavors. Steve, it is so awesome to have you with us this morning.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me, Lisa.
I'm glad you're here. So you and I got to spend a little bit of time with one another last night, and I would love for you to just talk a little bit about your story, but in your story, I would love for the audience to hear about Marie.
Well, my story is I grew up in a typical home. Parents took us to church, loved the Lord. We graduated high school, went to work in the business, knew what I wanted to do, so started working there. And as I have said, my title over the years has changed, but I still just work for Dad. I graduated and
that's great.
Went to work for Dad, still work for Dad. He's still involved. And so I've been involved at Hobby Lobby in all kinds of aspects throughout the years and have gone on a little bit of a detour over the last few years, and that is with our Bible Museum project that we saw God take us on that journey. So opened that November of 17, and it's been exciting to see the response to the museum there in Washington, D.C. And so I've been blessed to be impacted by this book in a variety of ways. Mm-hmm. One is my family and through our business, which we strive to operate according to biblical principles, and being in a country that has been built on principles found in this book. None are perfect, my family, our business, or this nation, but have been tremendously blessed by the impact of this book and why we want to inspire people to take a look at it, to consider it, to know
engage
it.
Engage with it.
And
right.
Engage with it. So that's the short of my family history.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk a little bit more about the Museum of the Bible and what led you guys to do that. We were very blessed and honored last year to be invited twice, one for the grand opening, and it is just phenomenal. So for our listeners out there, it would be an awesome family vacation for you guys. Go and see the sights of Washington, D.C., but make sure that you put the Museum of the Bible on your stop.
So absolutely.
It is really an incredible place. In fact, I remember them saying that it would take you 9 8-hour days
right.
to get through the whole thing.
Yeah, there's plenty to see. One of the common comments, I didn't have enough time. So
that's right.
Be sure to plan as much time as you can.
Yes. So tell us about kind of the origins of Hobby Lobby. And like I said, go back to Marie.
Okay. And Marie is an interesting story. Marie was originally a preacher's kid. Her father was an evangelist, would go around and evangelize. And so she would go with him and would, you know, sing and play the piano and even speak. And that was her life. And one time a gentleman by the name of Walter came to the event out of curiosity. He was going down the street, as I understand, and saw this event going on, came in, and through the message felt convicted and came forward and accepted Christ as his Lord and Savior, and also felt called into the ministry at that time. Marie and Walter wound up connecting, marrying, and so Marie went from a preacher's kid to a preacher's wife because he did pastor churches, and they were small churches, never over 50, and they wound up having 6 kids, 3 boys and 3 girls. So there was not much to go around. Some of the kids would go to school without shoes, and there was times that I understand if they were going to have friends over, they would put empty Tupperware bowls in the refrigerator so that they wouldn't realize there was nothing in the refrigerator. But Marie continued to have a passion for missions and for sharing God's word, and she would crochet doilies to raise funds during a fundraising effort for missions that the church would have. And there was times that if she didn't sell her doily, she bought her own doily, even though they didn't have much. And was giving, though they never had much. If some of the church members would bring food from the garden, she would value what that was and pay tithes on that because she wanted to honor God and pay a tithe in all the increase that she had. So she just continued to have a love and a passion for God. She had a line of a poem that she loved to repeat, and she repeated it often. It was only one life soon will pass. Only what's done for Christ will last. And that vision and that passion passed on to her kids. All of them wound up going into pastoral ministry. They became pastors or married
a licensed
ministers.
There were 6 of them, right?
And there were six of them. And all went into the ministry, all but one of them. And that one was my dad. Marie is my grandmother. And my dad knew that he wasn't called into the ministry. There's a story of him at school where he was in a speech class and he was told he had to have a speech in front of the class. He said, I'm not going to get in front of the class. And the teacher says, no, you're going to have to. You're going to get a zero. He said, that's easy. Give me a zero. I'm not going to. And I think he wound up speaking to her after class by himself because he just was not wanting to get up in front of people. So he that was not his calling. He knew it. But in high school, started working in retail, took to it well, had a good teacher, trainer.
Had a knack for it. Right?
Had a knack for it, mm-hmm. Yeah. But that passion, that love for God's word and for giving, my dad got from my grandmother, Marie, and has been an influence in our family. And so if you go into the lobby of our offices, there'll be a picture of Marie there. We say she's the hero of our family. And if you ask Dad today if he's outgiven my grandmother, he would say no. And that doesn't make sense to a lot of people, but when you understand how that Jesus was in the temple and saw the wealthy give of their wealth, and the widow give her 3 mites, he said an interesting comment. He said, she gave more. So God's not interested in big numbers. He's interested in our heart.
Right.
And
they
had given out of their wealth. She gave when she had nothing, and that's kind of where my grandmother was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you talked about that last night. I mean, there's a difference in giving out of your abundance and then giving when you don't have much.
Yeah,
so.
And again, God owns it all. And so big numbers don't impress him, but when we give out of a heart, he knows those that have given more. My grandmother on her dying bed, my aunt was there, and my aunt says that when she was about to pass away, my grandmother said, do you see them? And she said, no, what are you talking about? Mother. And she said, the angels, they're coming to get me. And so I believe that God rolled out the red carpet for my grandmother. She didn't have all her theology right, but she had a heart and a passion for God, and he recognized it. And that is what I think God notices is, does he fully have our heart? That's what he wants.
Mm-hmm. I love that. So talk to us a little bit about when your dad started Hobby Lobby. I kind of know the story, but some of our listeners may not know. What precipitated that? And just talk to us about the beginnings of Hobby Lobby.
Yeah, so as I said, Dad started his retail career in high school. DECA program, distributive education. Part of the class was you got a job, and that counted as your class. And just continued in his retail career. General merchandiser, wound up at a company called TGNY, based in Oklahoma City, which is where we are. And was very successful, one of the youngest managers given a store, and again, just had a knack for retail, did well. Then it was in 1970 when he started manufacturing some mini frames. There was a design trend and saw an opportunity, borrowed $600, bought a chopper, some molding, and started manufacturing frames. Me and my brother would glue frames for 7 cents a frame as some bubble gum.
Cheap child labor.
And yeah, cheap child labor. But it got us some bubble gum and baseball card money, and so that's how we got started. And it was 2 years later, in 1972, when he opened his first retail in a 300-square-foot space, about the size of an average living room maybe, and called it Hobby Lobby. In the back 300, there was a total of 600 square feet. It was where the manufacturing operation was moved to. Then it was 3 years after that, in 75, that he left his day job for this new startup. My mother was working for free to keep the thing going while Dad was at his day job. But in 75, left that to go full-time and has been growing it ever since. And God has blessed.
And what time did you come on board? I know that you were working like when you were young for 7 cents an hour or whatever, 7 cents a frame. But talk to us a little bit about your background. How did you prepare to go into the business? And you are now the president
President. Dad's still involved as CEO, but my title is president. During elementary, when we were 7 and 9, my brother, when he started the manufacturing, we were making the 7 cents a frame. But then as we got into high school, we would work at summers down at the store and work on weekends. So we were used to working, doing, taking out trash and
whatever
painting
needed
buildings
to be done.
And, you know, displaying things. So whatever needed to be done. And then I remember in high school sitting in the auditorium thinking about, you know, what do I do? Am I going to go to college or do I go into the business? Because I knew that's what I wanted to do, and decided I'm going to go ahead and go straight into the business, and told my dad I was ready to work full time. So he gave me a job when I graduated in 1981, and have been there ever since.
And what was your first job? What
first job
did
was
he give you?
Traveling to the stores. My title was a liaison. I'm a high school graduate. Didn't make sense for me to be a supervisor over managers that had been in retail longer than I'd been alive. And so I would just call the liaison. I would go between the stores and the corporate office, communicate, and then I had some buying duties, and over the years have done a variety of things. But my first job out of the school was traveling, communicating. I was at each store at least once every 2 weeks, communicating back and forth between the stores and the corporate office.
I love that, because you were on the front line. You were there with the front line people and probably could see, I mean, you probably learned a lot about the business.
A lot of learning. You set up, as we would set up new stores, there's always lots of learning there. So I was in the middle of a lot of that. We had 8 stores when I graduated and have over 800 today.
That's incredible. That is incredible. So I know that family is really important to you. And this is what, 4 generations?
We have the 4th generation. Gen 3 is starting to work into business and are old enough. The Gen 4 are not young enough at this point, but there are 4 generations.
I think that is so neat. What a legacy. So talk to us a little bit about your particular family.
I got married a couple years after I graduated high school. My wife was a senior in high school when I proposed to her. Graduated in May. We got married in August. A couple years later, we had our first child, our only son, and then we have 5 girls. So I've got a total of 6 kids. The first 4 are all a couple years apart. I've said that our 4th child was our first last child, and then 7 years later, we decided to have Grace, our second last child, and then 5 years after that, we adopted our last child, Gabriella. She's from China and has been a blessing to our family.
Right, and I know this story, that your kids were the ones that really were encouraging you to adopt, correct?
Yeah, so as I said, we had already had our second last child, and we thought we were done, and at my wife's birthday dinner, one of the kids started saying, "We need to adopt a girl from China." Again, we were done for the second time,
right.
But God led us into the adoption process. It was very clear that that was His plan for our family, and we share about that in our book, This Dangerous Book, where God led us on that journey and has truly been a blessing to our family, and she's going into the 7th grade this year.
You can't imagine life without her, I'm sure.
Exactly, yeah. She's a ball of energy. She's just a delight to have in our home.
Good. Well, as I had said, we were so blessed to attend the grand opening of the Museum of the Bible. So just talk to us a little bit about that, kind of how that started, and just tell us that story just a little bit.
Yeah, so it was an interesting story. We were approached by a group that wanted to put a Bible museum in Dallas and wanted to know if we would help them acquiring a location. And I said, well, if the right deal came up, we would consider it. So they were looking around. Nothing ever developed. And then they mentioned an artifact that we could buy at a real good deal. And I said, we might be willing to buy that for your museum project. We never did acquire that item, but it opened the door for them to start asking around. They were in that world. They knew where the collectors, the dealers, the auction houses were. And our first artifact was bought in 2009, and the economy was struggling. And so there were opportunities that presented themselves. And so not having any idea that we would be able to collect as much as we did, as rapidly as we did, the collection grew. And at some point, we just felt this sense of responsibility. Maybe we need to make sure that this dream became a reality, because we've been entrusted with an incredible collection. So it kind of became our project. I say God kind of tricked us into it, because it wasn't ours to begin with. But we had the resources to get it launched, and we had a collection that they had neither. And so we kind of took it on and said, we'll make sure that it happens. And that's when we opened it up to say, well, what if it, God doesn't want it in Dallas? When I looked at the top 10 metros, the other two that stood out to me were New York City and Washington, D.C. So we looked in all three cities for a while. And then we did a survey, and the survey showed that it would be best attended in D.C., which just makes sense.
With the Smithsonian there, there's so many awesome museums already.
Yeah, it's the hub of museums in the country.
So
that just makes sense. So we focused there about 18 months later. The building that we're in went up on the market. We acquired it in 2012, started the renovation in 2014. There were tenants that had to move out. So in 2014, started the renovation and then opened in November of 2017.
And has anything surprised you?
You know, I think that what the experience for me along the road is I have been able to rub shoulders with leading scholars in the world. And what I continue to be blessed with is the more I know about this book, the more incredible I understand this book to be, the more appreciation I have for this book. And that I grew up loving this book and reading it and studying it and never formally, but, you know, going to church. So I've always had love, but the experience has truly been a thrill to me to say the more I know about this book, the more I love it.
Yeah, your faith has grown, you said, through this whole experience, right?
Exactly.
Everyone's faith in the family's grown. Yeah, it only made sense because I think you said before you founded the actual building, you had 30,000 artifacts.
Yeah, yeah.
And those don't all fit in the garage.
That's right. And we also started doing a temporary exhibit because we had this sitting in our closet. And as I've said, our family, we're not collectors. We were not buying these artifacts because we're collectors. There are collectors, and we bought items from collectors. That's just kind of in their blood, but it wasn't necessarily our family. We bought it because we want to tell the story. And when we had this collection growing, before we ever knew when we would open or where we would open, we were itching to tell these stories. And so we started a temporary exhibit. Started in Oklahoma City, went to six cities around the U.S. It opened doors for international exhibits. We had exhibits at the Vatican and in Jerusalem. We were in Cuba twice with an exhibit. So we just wanted to tell this book story to as many people as we can. And our purpose line is that we want to invite all people to engage with this book. That is what we want to do.
Right, exactly. Hey, we are going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more of Steve Green. Thinking about your dad, five of the six kids went into ministry. Your dad did not, but I say your dad is in ministry. He's in marketplace ministry. Your family has been because of some of the organizations that you've supported.
Yeah, and I have, it's been pointed out before, and so I try to adjust what I say into pastoral ministry or a church-type ministry because, yes, Dad is clearly in ministry with what he has been able to do with our giving from Hobby Lobby, which a lot of it boils down to the Bible, translating the Bible, making it available on your phone to distributing it around the world and with the ministries in over 100 countries around the world that we have worked with. So we have been blessed to be a part of spreading God's word to people all over the world.
Right. Is it Every Home for Christ?
Every Home for Christ
is one of the organizations.
One of the two ministries that does a lot of that. Then One Hope being the other one. We started with One Hope first, and a few years later, Every Home for Christ are two that we have significantly given to help spread God's word around the world.
And I can't remember which one, but your dad had a big, hairy, audacious goal reaching, a billion people?
It was originally 100 million.
100 million.
100 million in a 5-year plan. So the family kind of agreed to that and had this schedule of what our giving would need to look like over that 5 years, every 6 months, increasing the giving to a point where that in that 5-year period, we would help the funding of the distribution of 100 million Book of Hopes from the ministry that's now called One Hope. And Dad tells us later that as you know, and he kind of came up with that schedule. My brother kind of came up with the same thing. And he would say that he kind of would chuckle and says, there's no way we're going to be able to do that, you know, because
right.
It would accelerate our giving huge I don't know how many fold, 5-6 fold over a 5-year period from where we were at. And he says, we're not going to be able to do that. And yet we were able to, and it has continued since then. And so there have been today over a billion One Hopes that we have been able to fund the distribution of. And so in that 5 years, we did the 100, and then since then it has far exceeded that. So it's been just a thrill to see how that God has blessed the efforts, and when we didn't even think we could, but God blessed it.
Well, there's so many different things that we could talk about, but when I really think about the Green family, there's a couple words that come to my mind, and it's certainly extreme generosity. And I know that you've said you guys had some periods of time where you really struggled, right? And you weren't even sure if Hobby Lobby was going to make it.
Yeah, I'd say for the first 20, 25 years, the primary focus was just making the business successful, striving. There were challenges. One of the big challenges was in 1985. Because of 85, my father invited the family over in 86, in the spring of 86, to sit us down and basically told us he didn't know how we would be able to survive. He had always been able to figure out how we'd pay the bills, and it was tight at times, but got to a point where he didn't know how we would actually be able to make it, because in 85, we actually lost money, the only year in our history where we lost money, because the oil boom had busted in the oil patch. Our stores were all in the Oklahoma, Texas area, and there were businesses going out right and left, and we were struggling and possible candidate of that as well. Dad talks about this in his book, More Than a Hobby, where he spent a lot of time just crying out to God, avoiding the phone because the phone calls weren't good, and saying, God, if you want this business to survive, you know, you're going to have to intercede. And he did. And then that year, our profits in 86 were almost twice the best year that we had ever had. And so there was really a lesson that Dad continues to even teach us to this day, and that is that this is not our business. This is God's business. We are stewards of what he has entrusted with us. At the time, he talks about how that a certain amount of pride would creep in because of the success, and look at what I can do. And he just felt like God said, well, let's see what you can do without my blessings. And didn't go so well.
Yes.
And so, again, a great lesson for us to realize that we've just been entrusted with whatever God's given us, and we're stewards of it.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Right. Tell us, Steve, about something extra that you have even noticed maybe in one of your team members, maybe a family member. What is that something extra that makes them extraordinary in what they do?
Well, I think that what comes to my mind is that we are empty of ourselves, and that we understand that it is God that makes us whatever we are, that our abilities, our skills, whatever success we have, we understand it comes from God. Going back to the lesson that Dad learned, when God takes his hand off of us, our life is a mess. But with God's hand, with our efforts to seek his face, that something extra that is all that we are about is God and his blessing on our life. That doesn't mean success, though. It goes back to my grandmother, Marie. I believe God rolled out the red carpet for her. She lived her life faithful. She did what God called her to do, which did not mean that this world took notice of her. Mm-hmm. She never wrote a book. She never did anything that this world would recognize her for. And yet God rolled out the red carpet because she lived her life. Her heart was fully committed to him. And when our heart is committed to God, God blesses us. And her kids all are serving the Lord, a great family. That is
That's
a
success.
Blessing. And in
yes.
essence, it is God that is the extra in our family and has been a blessing
for
us.
He's something extra. I love that. Yes, and when you were saying that, I'm just reminded there's a verse in John that I love that says that we must decrease so that he may increase. And it's like empty. Everything we have comes from you, and we can do nothing apart from you. Right. So I just love that. And I just think, too, I look at your family and I just think, you know, you guys have been very faithful stewards to obey and to really seek God's will in things. Right. And just obey.
Yeah. I think that, again, there's times when it's easy for us to say that we operate our business according to biblical principles with our first statement of purpose within the business. But it's easy to say that. Sometimes God says, are you sure that you mean that? And that's where some of the challenges that we face, specifically the Supreme Court challenge, where we were told by the HHS mandate we had to provide abortive product. And I think it was God saying, okay, you say this is my business. You say this is that you're going to operate according to my principles. Let's see if you really mean that. And that was a challenge. But when the family met together, the decision was pretty much unanimous. We can't be a part of taking life, because if this is God's business, we need to do it his way. And I don't think he would. And we're just stewards of what he has entrusted us to. And unanimously, we decided we have no option but to sue this government that we love and led us on that track that ultimately wound up in winning it at the Supreme Court.
Yes, and I'm sure that some of our listeners out there, there have been times where things have come up that maybe challenge their values, challenge what they really believe. And I love the fact that your dad called a family meeting and called everyone together, but said very little.
Right.
Right?
He was one to hear from everybody.
Yes.
And it really started with the Gen 3, those that were there. There was about 18 of us, I believe, at my brother's home. And everybody shared. Some didn't have a lot to say. Some had some questions. And there was discussions, some honest discussions about the ramifications. And, you know, are there some alternative opportunities? Or is it just either we have to sue or is there other options? And really, when it boiled down to it, we felt like there was really no option that we had because it was the government was requiring it. And so it was one after the end of the day, there was a certain peace in knowing that no matter what happened, we were in good hands. Not guaranteed that we would win.
Right.
My
you
brother,
had to go into it knowing that you may not. And there were some heavy penalties, correct?
Exactly. I mean, the fine was $1.2 million a day, which we knew was not sustainable, and that was part of the discussion. But my brother did the movie End of the Spear, which talks about five missionaries that were martyred in the Ecuadorian jungles. And they're down there doing God's call, and it cost them their life. So sometimes God allows tragedy. And we didn't know what God was going to allow to happen. We knew that the fine wasn't sustainable, but there was just a peace in knowing we know we're doing what's right, and we can't be a part of taking life.
Mm-hmm. Well, the world was watching that, and those that are faith-based businesses, you guys were an awesome example during that time.
Well, we owe a debt of gratitude to people all over the country because everywhere we went, people said they were praying for us, and
right. We
appreciate the prayers.
Yes, that makes a difference.
Yes, absolutely.
So just a couple more questions. What is the something extra that you feel like every leader needs?
I look in our business and we kind of start. I remember one of our family meetings and Dad wrote up on the board, God owns it all. And if you start with that, and it's easier said than done, what are the ramifications if God owns it? That means that I don't just decide to do whatever I want to. The family doesn't. This is not ours to do with what we want to. We're stewards of it. And so When you actually apply that concept, not just say it, but apply the ramifications of what that means, that then sometimes it makes the hard decisions easy. We know what we can and can't do because it's not ours. God owns it. And to me, it starts with that.
Mm-hmm. And there's all kinds of spokes off of that wheel, I would imagine, because I'm thinking if God owns it, if this is not our business, then how would God treat our employees? And how would he act in this particular situation? And it could not only what you guys face, but I'm just thinking every aspect.
Right. Treating your employees right. Again, when it gives a lot of answers to a lot of how
right.
that you're going to do business.
Absolutely. So I want to give you the opportunity. Is there anything exciting that's just happened or something that you would want our listeners to know about, like a book that just got released?
My wife and I just finished a book that came out November, coinciding with the opening of the museum, This Dangerous Book is what it's called. And it really tells about our journey of that opening of the museum. It talks a little bit about the Bible story as well as how the Bible's influenced our life. It talks about our adoption story and how God directed us there. So we have that book. My wife and my daughter have also come out with a book
really?
Called Only One Life, which
awesome.
Ties into my grandmother's favorite line, only one life soon will pass, only what's done for Christ will last. And so, and it talks about women of legacy and talks about leaving a legacy. And
I
so,
love that. I'll be downloading that today.
Yeah, another great opportunity for people to.
Only One Life.
Only One Life. Yep.
All right, very good. Well, Steve, thank you so much. This has been just a true joy to have you here.
My pleasure. Thank
it's
you for having
fun.
Me.
All right. Take care.
Our show today is executive produced by Brian Muncy. Our technical producer is Daniel Williams. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc. 2018. For show notes or to reach out to Lisa, visit lisagailnichols.com/somethingextra. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen.